This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire. Thanks, Audible.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. Happy Halloween, everybody. I hope that it's a good holiday for you. First of all, since we're coming out the day before Halloween, as you know, the United States, particularly eastern portion of the United States, has been really hit very hard by Superstorm Sandy, originally Hurricane Sandy. And just wanted to say a word to all of you in the afflicted regions. God bless. We hope that you got through this okay. And if you lost property and so forth, we feel sad for you. And of course, our greatest condolences go out to those who lost loved ones in this horrible, horrible event. So hang in there. And we are thinking of you. But let's move on to some entertainment. It is Halloween time, so let's go to some great campfire stories. Now, I love these stories of haunted hospitals. And we have Zach on the line from California. He works in the supply department at a hospital, and he has some interesting experiences to share. Zach, welcome to the program. Thank you for sharing your story on campfire, and please tell us what happened.
Hey, Jim, how are you doing?
I am doing good, except I got to tell you, the lights might go out. I'm recording this in the middle of Hurricane Sandy, and believe it or not, Ohio is being affected. So lights are blinking here, but we're going to try to push through.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, well, anyway, I just started working. Yeah, I just started working at the hospital out here in California, and basically what I do is I work in the supply department where I deliver stuff, and it's sort of an old hospital. It's like early to mid 60s they built it, but the supply department actually used to be an old church, because we have the accounting area above where we work, and which I found out 2 weeks after starting there is where we actually work, where they keep the supplies. Used to be the basement of the church where they would prepare bodies for funerals at the church.
Ooh.
Yeah. So as soon as I started working there, there were a couple of guys who I work with. I'm not going to name names. I told them about this, but they didn't want me to name them. But they were, when they first started working there, it was right when the iPhone came out. So they were, all of them got one, and they're all messing around with the pictures. And my buddy, he's sitting at the computer in the department, and there's this big brown door It's this huge, heavy door that closes on its own, and they were taking pictures just to see how the cameras work. And they snapped a picture of him, and in the door, first off, the door was propped open, which there's no way it can do that, because this door just slammed shut. And there was a white shape that looked like a little girl in like 1800s Victorian era looking clothing in the doorway.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so he showed me the picture, and I'm thinking, like, you know, people have shown me pictures, and it's like, it was really convincing, but I really didn't think too much of it. So later on that day, I'm by myself in the department. I'm stocking the stuff, because I'm going to go take stuff to the OR, and everyone else is either delivering stuff or they were already in, they were on lunch. So I'm putting some catheters into my basket, and I look out of the corner of my eye, and I see this black shape, and it's just like, well, what is that? And I look, and nothing's there. So I go back to putting stuff away. And then I'm looking out of the corner of my eye, and I see it again. But then I look, and it stays there. And it's this, like, this 3 or 4 foot little girl, all in black, with long black hair. And then I froze, and then I blinked, and it was gone.
Huh. My goodness.
So, and actually, what's kind of crazy is, I've heard, after I told everybody about this, the next, you know, later that day, because I was obviously, like, freaked out, I told my friend who was in that picture with the little girl, and he told me that, upstairs, the people in accounting, they have a name for that little girl. Her name's Molly.
Ooh.
Well, turns out she's there all the time. Like, they'll be at lunch and they'll see chairs moving and they'll hear tapping on the keyboards upstairs because accounting's right above where we are.
Yeah.
And there was a lady who is actually dating my friend, said that she was working, her friend was working in the security area, and this was probably about 2 or 3 in the morning a couple of months back. They said that she was, you know, sitting at the hospital just watching the cameras, and they said she'd seen someone walking through the accounting area on the cameras. But that's all locked from the outside, so they're like, well, how's someone getting in there? So they called security. Security ran in there. They unlocked everything, looked, and they're like, well, this thing's been locked. There's no way anyone could have gotten in here. But she says she swears she saw something. So there's all kinds of weird stuff going on around there.
Does it bother you, or have you gotten used to it?
No, I've actually, because I like this kind of stuff, and because it's not really, it's not like a poltergeist, it's not like a demon, I mean, it's just a little girl, so it's not really like a very malevolent presence, but what's actually kind of ironic is, because I probably submitted to giving you my story a few days ago, I actually had something happen to me again last night.
Oh, tell us, yeah.
Because I went into work kind of early yesterday, like, because I usually work, my shift starts at 7, but I usually, because since I live out in Riverside, I got to drive out to Corona. It's about a 30-45 minute drive, depending on how traffic is. So I usually get to work an hour early just because traffic won't be as bad. But I got to work, I was at my buddy's Halloween party the night before, and he lives out in Corona. So I just said, screw it, I'll just go to work straight from his party. So I got to work at like 1 in the morning. And what was actually kind of funny is I was sitting there listening to your show on my iPod. So I'm just like staring off into space, just killing time. And then I start hearing because the accounting building's right, like directly right above us. And I start hearing footsteps running back and forth on the ceiling.
Ooh. Oh, ho, 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 ho. Oh.
So that was kind of fun. And because I was listening to your stories and I'm like hearing something, I'm just like, nah, it's nothing. And then it starts getting louder.
And you thought it was my show, but then you're like, wait a minute.
I thought it was something going on. Like it was just something in my iPod. So I paused it and I took my earbuds out and I still hear the running upstairs. And so it was just like, no, I'm not doing this. So I walked up and I went to Denny's. So I'm like, I'm not staying at work any longer.
Don't blame you at all. Well, yeah. Zach, please keep us updated. Let us know if anything else happens. And thanks for coming on the show on this dark and stormy night and sharing that very creepy story. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is The Casual Vacancy by J.K. Rowling. So, for a free audiobook of your choice, this or another, go to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire. You know, we just love Audible. They really have one of the finest products out there, and we really do believe in it. If you are listening to this show, it's obvious to me that you like fine audio entertainment, if I do say so myself. And other than these podcasts, another place where you can find hundreds of thousands, or over 100,000 titles, shorts much more now, is audible.com. If you're into reading, but you find that you don't have quite the time that you'd like to have, Audible is the answer. If you find that sometimes you're doing things that, you know, you're not particularly fond of, maybe you're cleaning the house, maybe you're climbing the Stairmaster, whatever it might be, Audible has the answer. It's a very reasonable monthly fee, and best of all, starting out, it costs you nothing. Give it a try. If you haven't done it, please go over to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. Pick up this book by J.K. Rowling, you know, her first effort since the unbelievably successful Harry Potter series. Or if that's not your cup of tea, try something else. Either way, try Audible. Go over to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire. Show them your support for the show and show them, hey, you know, I'll take free stuff like anybody else. Check it out. We certainly recommend them Audible. Thanks so much, Audible.
Be sure to follow Jim on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Find all the links at jimherald.com. Now we return to Jim Harold's Campfire.
On this dark and stormy night, Bailey joins us from the western U.S. Now, she has a story about a weird shadow and something she saw very strange on her ceiling. Bailey, welcome to the program. I don't think I've heard a story quite like this, so I'm very curious. What happened?
Okay, well, it happened this summer, and basically one night, I woke up in the middle of the night, which happens a lot, just like, I'm just a really light sleeper, and at first, I was like still kind of asleep, but once I woke up a little bit more, I saw that there was a weird shadowy thing on my ceiling, and as soon as I saw it, like, I woke up quickly, because it scared me, and then I saw this hand reached down from the shadow, like a spidery, spindly, black kind of hand, and it freaked me out. So I rolled out of bed, and I ran over, and I turned on the light, and then as soon as the light turned on, it disappeared. And then I didn't sleep for the rest of the night.
I can't blame you. I don't think that I would either.
Yeah. Anyway, and then I think it was like a week later, I'd kind of, you know, put it behind me or whatever, and I was asleep again. And I woke up in the middle of the night again. But this time when I opened my eyes, it wasn't a shadow on my ceiling. It was a pool of water. It wasn't like normal water. It was, I only call it water because that's like the closest thing I can think that it would be. It was blue, like really bright turquoise blue, but it looked like there was light shining down through it. Almost like when you're under deep water and like you look up and you can kind of see the sun. It was all shimmery and really and pretty and blue, and it was beautiful, really. And like unlike the black thing, like it only scared me because it was strange. Like the shadow, I thought, I don't know, it felt kind of sinister, but this water was, it was just weird. It didn't feel threatening. But then this little tendril of water reached down and reached towards my face like the black shadow thing had done.
Right.
And that freaked me out. So again, I rolled out of bed and I turned on the light and it disappeared.
Oh.
And again, I didn't sleep, you know, for the rest of the night. And I have this friend that we always, you know, share our experiences with one another when we have them. And he told me, no, it was the same thing. It just made itself look pretty so it could trick you. It was trying to catch you or whatever.
It's like shape-shifting, basically.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just what he said. It felt like a completely different thing, but, I mean, you know, who knows? Anyway.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, there's just a little more. About a week or so again later, the same thing happened. I woke up in the middle of the night, I looked up, and the water was back on my ceiling. But this time, like, I had told myself, if it comes back, I'm going to hold still because I want to see what it is, you know? Mm-hmm. I want to figure it out. So I didn't move, and it didn't try to touch me again. Instead, it spoke.
It spoke?
And, yeah, it spoke. And it said, here, I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. It said,
wow. And it was enough that you had to write it. Wow. Okay. I'm in suspense.
It's just like, really strange. It's not long. It said, there is no destiny, only symmetry. And oh, what a beautiful symmetry we are.
Wait a minute. Now, I don't know if you heard it, but we had, and if you didn't hear it, this will give you chills. And we just replayed it last week. We had somebody who called in and told a story of like a ghost, and he heard somebody speak out, what a mirror image we are.
No, see, like, I did hear that last week, and that's why I called you, because I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds almost exactly like what this thing on my ceiling said.
I've got chills. Ooh.
And so, like, it was so strange. Like, I mean, I heard that story, and, like, I mean, it's different, because I remember he saw, like, the figure of a person, and, but, like, what they said.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's, like, what made me want to call you, but, like, there's a little bit more. It's, like, I don't know, this kind of strains credulity, but, like, a little bit more. It was, like, two nights later, and I got off work really, really late, like, after midnight. And I was hungry, so I went to Walmart to buy some food.
Okay.
And I'm standing in the frozen food aisle, like, sleepily trying to decide what I want to eat. And this little lady walks up, this little African-American lady, and she's short. Like, I'm 5'4", and she was shorter than me. She had to have been, like, 4 or 5. I don't know. She was tiny. But she was older, like, well, not old, maybe 60 or something. She kind of had a little gray hair. And she had really pretty eyes, like a really light kind of tan color.
Hmm.
And she walked up to me and she put her hand on my arm and she said, "What a beautiful symmetry you are." And then she walked away. And I was, there was no one else in Walmart because it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I like, she just walked away. And so after a stunned second, I sprinted down the aisle, and there was an employee, like, stocking shelves, and I said, "Did you just see a little old lady?" And he said, "Yeah, she went into the produce section." So, like, I ran down there to, like, look in the produce section, and there wasn't anybody there. So,
Now, I don't know. Now, those eyes again. Now, we've heard, you know, very distinct and powerful eyes that angels, for example, have. How did you explain those eyes again? They were...
It was, like, a really light... tan kind of color, like almost gold, but like not quite metallic, just like a really light tan brown color.
Well, I must say, Bailey, that is a fantastic story. And the symmetry comment, oof, chills.
Yeah,
I'm sure the other people out there have gotten the same thing.
And I mean, you know, like the words are the same, but I've never heard of the blue thing on the ceiling. Like I've asked a few people what they thought it might be, and someone said, like, oh, it was an angel protecting you from the black thing you saw on your ceiling. And then someone else said, oh, you accidentally met one of your spirit guides or something, which I'm not sure I believe in spirit guides, but I mean, it's a possibility, I guess. And I mean, I don't know. It's just so weird.
Well, I guess you could say it's weird, but it's also utterly, utterly fascinating. And Bailey, we thank you for coming on the campfire and sharing your very unique and very impactful story.
Oh, thank you.
And next up, John from one of my favorite states, actually from where my family hails, West Virginia. And he's going to tell us about a story of family lore, but a story that came to life in a sense. John, welcome to the program. And, can't wait to hear what happened. What happened? This sounds like a fascinating experience.
Thanks, Jim. It really was. And thanks for having me to your campfire. Family lore holds that my great-great-grandmother, Moon, was a Creek Indian. And, of course, we call them Creeks. They call themselves Muscogees. But, you know, family lore is sometimes just that, family lore. And so many of us Americans have... references to Native Americans in our history, but we don't really know that much about them. So I hopped on Ancestry.com and started researching, found some information, but then wound up asking my dad. And it turns out Dad knew a lot more than he had ever mentioned. And he told me that there was a site down at Browns Mountain, which is outside of Macon, Georgia, where the family cemetery was. Where this woman resided. And I thought, wow, okay, let's check this out. So so I called, I did some online research and found the local historic society and called down. And sure enough, Browns Mountain had been given to the state of Georgia by our family in the, I think, the 1990s.
Hmm.
And was a 180-some acre Civil War historic site, but many millennia before that had been the home of the Muscogee Indians. And so that part fit. And the fellow said, now, you know, you're welcome to come down, but I have to warn you, the family cemetery is in terrible disrepair. It's mm-hmm. all overgrown, and I thought, oh, that's a really upsetting situation.
Sure.
So I thought, I'll go down. And as you know from your time in West Virginia, Atlanta is about 7.5 hours, and Macon is about another hour and a half or two from there.
Sure.
So loaded up the car, and I had a friend who was finishing up medical school in Atlanta. She later became my wife, happily. But at the time, she was a friend, and so I went down to visit her. And she and I both got our weed whackers and went down to Macon. And that day, I don't know if you've been down to Georgia in the early summer, but it's very nice, very hot, starting to get muggy, and not the best day for exploring out of doors, much less weed whacking. But,
sure.
you know, we went down there. It turned out it was a very nice government park. Had a gigantic, you know, park-style map of the location. So we found the cemetery on the map and made our way around till we discovered the cemetery. And we found an old waist-high iron gate, and we tried to open it, but it was, you know, kind of held in place with weeds. So we did some weed whacking and finally got the gate to open and went in and started exploring. And the cemetery itself was spread out. And there were trees growing up through some of the graves and tall grass and brambles, and it was kind of a trek. But we finally found the grave of my great-great-grandmother, Nancy Moon, and her husband, Daniel Rogers. Hmm. And, you know, so we're still wondering, Moon is sometimes an English name also, or it could have just been her family name, you know, from her tribe. So we were trying to find some more information, thought, well, let's clear some of this brush out. So I fired up the weed whacker, and Tanya got busy with clippers and a broom, and we were kind of going along, and I guess we got a little separated, and I lost sight of Tanya. And all of a sudden, I heard this blood-curdling scream.
Ooh.
And yeah, and I dropped my weed whacker and picked up the machete and ran towards the direction of her scream. And when I got there, I couldn't have guessed what I would find. It turns out there was Tanya, still kind of pale and shaking, hand on her chest. And there was a park ranger, kind of pale and shaking, hand on his chest. And they scared the bejeebers out of each other. And it turns out, after some pointed questioning on his part, with his hand on his service weapon, I have to add, and of course I had a machete, so I don't blame him.
Right.
He said, guys, now I understand why you're here, but this is a protected historical archaeologic site, and you need a permit to be doing what you're doing. I said, oh, you know, I didn't know that. I'm very sorry.
Right.
He said, okay, I understand your situation. Go ahead and finish up cleaning up Moon's and Daniel's graves, but then you have to go and apply for this properly. So we said, okay, and we thanked him. And he said, by the way, this cemetery is haunted. We were going, oh, really? But it turns out he was talking about the haunting of a 10-foot rattlesnake that lived on the property. And he said, you better be, you know, thank your blessings that you didn't run across him.
You know, I was thinking that when you said that, with high weeds and nobody around for a while,
right.
The first thing I thought was probably back from my time down in West Virginia even, because there's some snakes down there too. I thought, ooh, that sounds like a perfect place to run into some snakes.
You have that exactly right. And happily, maybe we have the weed whacker to thank. Maybe it was, you know, the beneficence of Moon, but somehow he left us alone. And so we kind of finished up and headed back for the car. And we put our tools away and got in. And I was about to turn the car on. And all of a sudden, I heard a woman's voice softly singing. And it lasted only a few seconds, and then it was gone, but all the hair on the back of my neck stood straight up. Even though it was kind of a happy, pleasant sound, it was still, like, chilling. And I looked over at Tanya, and she had turned white as a sheet again. I was sure at that point that she'd never come on another expedition with me. And I said, did you hear anything? And she said, well, I thought I heard a woman singing. And we thought, whoa, we hadn't turned on the car. We didn't have a radio on. We had turned our cell phones off out of respect for being on the hallowed ground of a family cemetery. And we had no explanation for where this singing had come from. But we both agreed it sounded like a woman's voice. It sounded happy. And we couldn't make out any of the words. And we looked at each other and together said, wow, was that Moon? Was she thanking us? And to this day, I don't know. But it sure got me thinking. And I grew up being fairly skeptical, although I've had a few interesting encounters. But this one really got me. And I really have to say that I think I met my great-great-grandmother that day.
Well, that is a very neat story. I just love that. And was it almost like a lullaby, or what was the tenor of the singing?
Actually, that's you nailed it exactly, Jim. It had a very lullaby, kind of happy, soothing a tenor to it.
That's a great story. Maybe this show will be called Singing Moon.
Excellent.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us and telling us a neat story. And, you know, it's got to be a great thing to learn more about your family's genealogy and maybe actually get to meet one of your ancestors in the process.
You never know. You just never know.
Anthony from Buffalo is joining us. He's been on the program previously and has a couple of visitation stories to tell. Anthony, thank you for joining us, and tell us what happened.
All right. Thank you for having me. The first story I have is about my cat. A little bit of background on him before I move forward on the story, because it's kind of important, is so I was probably around 10 years old, and we moved from the city to the country. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that my father hates more than anything is mice. So the one thing he wanted to do as soon as we moved to the country was get a cat. My family is like a predominantly dog family. So naturally, you get a cat in a family that only's had dogs, and I want this as a pet. And my father, it was pretty firm with this cat's to stay outside. This cat is, you know, he specifically got it because he was a tough cat, and he's going to live outside and he's going to get all the mice. That was the intention of this cat. Well, naturally, through persistence and with a little luck from Mother Nature, we end up having like the worst winter ever. So Buffalo could definitely keep that reputation as having bad winters.
So I know your pain. I live in Cleveland. It's not quite as cold, but it's pretty darn cold.
Yes, exactly. So the cat ended up spending more and more time inside. And with the cat spending more time inside, my parents got worried about the claws, and it was a male cat, that he was going to start clawing up the furniture and spraying it. So naturally, they gave me an ultimatum that this is going to be your pet. We're going to get him fixed, and we're going to get him declawed so he could stay in the house. Naturally, I was thrilled. So the cat is now completely inside. The cat is probably, I could probably talk hours about how bold this cat was. You know, he was very, very protective of the house. He was very, very, we always kidded around that he was kind of like the bodyguard of the house. He wasn't affectionate in the way that, you know, you think cats would be. He right. was just the type of cat that was, he was always there. He was always surveying. He was not the type of cat that would like run and hide at the drop of a pan or something like that. He was the type of cat that he was there to make sure everything was okay.
It's kind of like a macho cat.
Very much so. Like almost in the way that, ironically enough, a dog would be. You'd have a dog that would be very protective over their family. The doorbell would ring. The cat had to make sure this person was allowed to enter before, you know, they were allowed to come in. So he was always right there. So, you know, fast forward, we've had the cat for about 12 years. he ends up becoming diabetic, which is very common for overweight cats, which, mind you, he is extremely overweight. He ended up tipping the scale at over 25 pounds at his heaviest, so he was quite a big boy. So when he became diabetic, there's a lot of things that go along with it, including like excessive urination, which again is going to play a role in this story. So the funny thing about the cat is, though he was, you know, like you said, macho, he never showed pain, he never showed fear. And that was one of the unfortunate side effects of him being diabetic, is that we didn't know, because he hid so many of the symptoms that are usually telltale signs. Right. So anytime he was, anybody, you know, if you have listeners who are diabetic, usually excessive urination, a lot of water drinking is involved. So the cat would drink a lot of water. He would go and hide in the basement and find somewhere to, you know, relieve himself. So, you know, we treated his diabetes and he lived to be about 16 years old. And we finally had to put him down, which was probably one of the most difficult things, because as fighting for this this pet to be your own and growing up from childhood to adulthood, this cat was quite amazing. I mean, he was probably the only cat I've ever seen that could walk into a vet on a leash. So I'd have to put the dog in a cat carrier and the cat would walk in.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So he was definitely very, very bold. So, again, when we had to put him down, it was a very difficult time for me, obviously. So, in the months that followed after that, not to rewind a little bit here, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. A couple of years after we got the cat, we got a small dog, a Shih Tzu. So, you know, the dog was obviously searching for, we always called her big brother. She right. would look at him in his normal spots, or sometimes would go and bark in areas that the cat would normally hang out in. Obviously, this pulled at the heartstrings a little bit, because was she doing this because she saw something, or was she doing this because it was habit? So as I went through, you know, day-to-day life, I had fish tanks, and like I said, anytime there was action in the house, the cat was always there. So if I was cleaning the fish tank, the cat would usually watch. Well, I noticed myself like cleaning the tank and thinking it must be the dog behind me, because the cat was long since gone. So I'd be talking to the dog. I turn around, no dog. Very strange. Be walking through the house a lot of times, you know, by myself, and I would hear what would sound like a cat running down the stairs. Now, if any of the listeners have cats, cats like to like maybe hit three steps on the way down. And with a 25-pound cat in the house, he'd hit like two or three steps quite hard. I mean, you'd hear it. So I'd go and check. Dog's asleep. Nobody else is in the house. The cat would also very commonly scratch, or pretend to scratch because he was declawed, at the post on the staircase. And it would make a very distinct noise. Even though cats are declawed, they still sound like they're doing some damage, but they're real. It's just their pads. And I would hear this noise and I would go and I'm thinking it's more of a motion setting in, you know, that he's not here. I'm thinking I'm hearing these things. So these things persisted. I heard constant, like, I thought I heard this cat hitting the floor, or heard him hitting the steps on the way down. And then there was a chair that he used to like to sit on, and my parents wanted to get rid of it, but I wouldn't let them get rid of it, and I brought it into my bedroom. And it was a wicker chair, and on several occasions, for some bizarre reason, I would wake up in the middle of the night to look at this chair, and with it being wicker, you should be able to like see right through it.
Right.
And I would see a shadow in the chair. I'd scramble for my glasses. I would put them on. There's all of a sudden now I could see through it. Now, whether it's my blurred vision or not, I couldn't tell you, but in that heat of that moment, I believed I saw him sitting in that chair.
Wow.
So then the other part is, like I had said about the excessive urination with the cats that are diabetic. I'd on several occasions, I would go in the basement. This became a very common routine for me in the morning when he was still alive. I would get up, go in the basement, gallon the bleach, and clean up the mess that Cat had left for me the night before. So it's a very distinctive odor. I don't know if you've ever had a cat or if the listeners had, but it's not a pleasant smell.
Right.
And needless to say, my parents were not happy. But it would be something I would have to do almost every day. And I noticed myself in the basement smelling this smell. Now, I'm talking 5 years later. This
wow.
isn't like a residual smell that stuck, okay? I mean, we're talking, this was years later. But on a previous, I've talked to you previously, I always consider myself a little bit of like a scared skeptic. It scares me, but I'm
right.
skeptical. So I kind of kept it to myself. Never really spoke about it because my mother doesn't believe anything. My father believes everything. So I figured I'd just keep this to myself. So last year, I got married and I moved out of my parents' house. And one of the things that I moved my furniture out of my bedroom and put it in my spare bedroom of my house. And one of the things that was in there was my cat's ashes. I had kept it in my room when he had passed. And these things that I have just told you kind of reverberated a little bit with me. And I'm like, well, he's been so protective of this house. I'm not going to take him out of this house. So I took those ashes and I put them in my sister's bedroom and took my furniture. So no big deal. Moved my stuff in. A couple weeks later, going to have dinner with my parents and my sister. And my sister turns to me and she says, by chance, did you put the cat's ashes in my bedroom? I go, yeah, I did. Why? She's like, well, I had a little bit of a freak out the other day. I said, what happened? She says, well, I was upstairs getting ready and I thought that the dog was next to me.
Right.
Rubbing in between my legs. Now, the one thing, you know, any listener has a cat, they know this is a cat thing. It's purely not a dog thing.
Right.
So she looked around, no dog. So she went back to getting herself ready. She felt it again. Now, my sister is, you know, kind of similar to me. She doesn't believe in it, but it scares her.
Right.
So she really started to freak out. And she ran into her bedroom and noticed the cat's ashes there. And like I said, the cat was a type of cat that if things changed or you were moving something, he was there to supervise. Like that was his role. He watched the house. If any, you know, if you're there moving something, he was right there to make sure it was, you know, put in the right spot. And my sister had a really tough time with this. Like she was like hysterical because it happened to her like twice in a row. And then she saw the ashes in her room. So when she told me this, I said, to be honest with you, I didn't take the ashes because I was afraid that he wasn't going to like it. And for me to say something like that is out on a limb because, like I said, I was skeptical. And even when I had these experiences about him, I didn't want to believe it. You know, I felt that it was more emotional than it was actually happening. So when I said this to them, my parents looked at each other and looked at me and said, you know, we've had the same types of things happen to us. My father has had, you know, several dreams about the cat walking around the house and him, you know, saying you should be dead.
Mm-hmm.
She says, you know, that smell in the basement will happen every once in a while. A lot of times, like right around the time we would have a party, because the cat was always like, we'd have a party, we'd have a lot of people over. Most cats would be concerned about getting stepped on. This cat was the type of cat that wanted to make sure, you know, you didn't take anything. I don't know what he thought, but he was always there.
He was monitoring everybody.
Yes, he'd walk around the crowd. He'd look at everybody. And he was, you know, he was a piece of work in himself. But, you know, the fact that I've kind of lived with this for 5 years and never shared it with my parents because I thought it was more in my head. And with my sister experiencing this shortly after I moved his ashes into her room, I don't know. I feel like there may be some merit to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I wanted to share that really ties it into the previous time I talked to you. I don't know if you remember my story about being in that bedroom and losing my ability to breathe. And
yes.
Once, okay, that cat came from that house. So my father went out, wanted to find the toughest cat that he could find. And he figured if he got this cat from a quote unquote haunted house, he could handle anything. So now we laugh about it because, you know, where we actually got the cat from and the fact that we've had other pets, other dogs, we've experienced nothing like this. But for some reason, that cat keeps coming back.
It is a fantastic story. What was the cat's name?
The cat looked very similar to Tom from Tom and Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up nicknaming him TC after the Hanna-Barbera character.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
TC kind of stuck because it was a little bit tougher than Tom, you know?
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. I know you have another one. We'll get that on another episode, but I love that story. What a fantastic, fantastic story. Thank you so much, Anthony.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of The Campfire. I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that these shows have been a lot of fun during the Halloween season and that you'll share them with folks. And who knows, maybe some people have some belated Halloween parties coming up over the weekend. And certainly we'd love you to play some of the campfire stories here. Maybe it'll get a conversation going. Also, I didn't mention it earlier, but October 31st is the deadline for the Kindle bonus book offer from my Plus Club for yearly members. If you sign up for a yearly program before the end of the day on Halloween or by midnight, then you will be it'll be eligible. You'll be eligible for it. So check it out over at jimherald.net and see what you think. We'd love to have you over there accessing all the archives and the additional content. We thank you so much. Again, God bless for all of the folks who have found themselves in the wake of Superstorm Sandy. And we hope that life gets better for you real soon here. Thanks so much, everybody. Happy Halloween, and as always, stay spooky. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.